All right, here we go. It's been a while since I heard that theme music. Welcome, everybody, to the Top DAT Podcast. My name is Brandon Holland. I'm your Uplift Athletic Trainer.
And I am Dr. Donita Valentine.
Oh, I'm excited. Well, we're back. How long has it been? Way too long.
Yeah, we're kicking it off at the end of National Athletic Training Month with Season 3, Episode 1. And we have a very exciting show today. We have an awesome guest. I cannot wait to introduce who we have coming up today. It's going to be a great time.
I can't wait. So let's get started, shall we?
All right. So we'll start with our social media shout outs. And first, we'll give a shout out to Dr. Sierra Hobbs.
Indeed. She just took an incredible job down at NC Central. So congratulations on that. Also shout out to Colin Francis for following us on Instagram. We appreciate the love and can't wait to reciprocate. So do we have any news? I think you're muted.
All right.
There we go.
We also have my parents were walking around the back of the house. So we have a big shout out to Nicole with EDAC, who has been highlighting athletic trainers in their various settings all month for National Athletic Training Month. So what is our slogan? From head to toe?
From head to toe.
Yeah, that always makes me think of that song from the 80s, Lisa Lisa and the Cult Jam.
Indeed, that's a classic.
Head to toe. Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm going to put that on my iTunes as soon as we wrap up now. See what you did.
Sorry.
Cool. So, yes, shout out to Nicole for doing it big. What else do we have?
Bash.
Bash Ball is coming up May 3rd, 2024 at 8 p.m. So if you're not familiar with Bash, it is the Baltimore Area Sports Health Initiative. It is a nonprofit organization run by our good friend Colin Francis that supports all kinds of incredible initiatives to get health care to people who are underserved. And right now their leading project is a movement to help get athletic trainers into Baltimore City public schools. So that is happening. And he's been instrumental in that. And if you would like to support the ball, it is a gala that we get together and everyone dresses up super fancy. We have some great food. There's going to be some celebrities and some pro athletes there. They have auctions and whatnot. And you can get tickets if you look on the Instagram page for the Bash Ball. Donita, do you have the Instagram handle for Bash?
Hey. I think it's at @BBSH.
At Bash.
On Instagram.
Super easy. So look them up, follow, like, and even if you can't attend, if you want to buy a ticket and donate one, or if you just want to give a donation to the organization, it's an incredible organization with some incredible people and incredible causes. So please, please, please support the Bash Ball.
So those are activities that are going on the East Coast. But as we move in our into our introduction of our featured guest, who's on the West Coast, I am so excited and honored to introduce Dr. Ethan Creesworth. Dr. Creesworth earned his PhD in athletic training from Rocky Mountain University of Health Professions in Provo, Utah. His research focus has been the epidemiology of musculoskeletal injuries among Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighters, in addition to instrument-assisted soft tissue mobilization. Currently, Dr. K is the director of education for Ghost Sleeves, and he is an adjunct, and we'll go into what Ghost Sleeves is a little bit later. It's pretty cool. He's also adjunct faculty at El Camino College. He is an acting and practicing AT. He's also running his jiu-jitsu business. He is also a lecturer for Smart Cuffs BFR Systems, and will be presenting this at the Far West Conference, which is taking place April 19th to April 21st. Additionally, he is the owner of Black Belts Sports Medicine. which oversees the medical handling for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federations. In the past, Ethan has been a professor and program director for Rocky Mountain University and Concordia University, as well as California State University, Dominguez Hills. Dr. K has worked with many Olympic, pro, college, and high school sports teams as a certified athletic trainer since 1996. He has been a contributing author in peer-reviewed journals such as International Journal of Athletic Therapy and Training, Journal of Athletic Training and Sports Healthcare, International Journal of Sports Physical Therapy, and the Journal of the Canadian Chiropractic Association. So very excited to have Dr. Creaseworth here on our show.
I appreciate it. That sounds really good on paper, doesn't it? Screaming out the entire bio. So I appreciate you, Danita, and nice to meet you, Dr. Holland. Great to have you on.
Thanks for joining us. That sounds pretty good. That sounds incredible. You have a really lot. Your resume is just jumping, and it's exciting to see people who are
old. I'm old. Well, I'm finally at the guy. I'm finally the guy who says I'm old as I see all these young athletic trainers coming up, and you know, me hiring all these young athletic trainers to, you know, do adjunct work or contract work. Man, I feel the years now. You know, I feel the years.
But the cool side of that is you don't get to be old in this business if you're not very good at what you do. So that's just a testament to your skill and your talent.
And I'm going to steal that. I'll coach you 3 times and then that's mine.
It's yours. You can have it. You don't even have to waste the 2
quotes. That was good. I love that.
So every time I check out Dr. Creaseworth's Instagram and social media, it's always a bike somewhere. He's on a bike going up some huge hill doing something for like 1,000,000 miles. And I'm just like, how in the world?
Yeah,
the energy.
I'm addicted to exercise for sure, whether it's, you know, the jiu-jitsu mats or riding my bike. But, you know, you get up 5:30, 6 o'clock and you get in 2 to 3 hours a day. And then, you know, come home, shower, eat, and you're ready to go. That's the start of my day. But, you know, I'm in bed by 8. Yeah. That's what it does to me. It puts me to bed by 8, but I love to compete. I still compete on the velodrome, which is an indoor bicycle track. It's called the velodrome. And then, you know, I compete on the outside road bike. And then, of course, jiu-jitsu, which has been my love since I was a high school wrestler. So
very cool.
Awesome.
Oh, high school wrestling. God, I love it. So in your bio, I mentioned ghost sleeves. I spelled that wrong. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that's been relatively new. You know, I was a director of education for Rock Tape for many years, and that's how I met you, Dr. B. So Rock Tape, being a kinesiology tape company that branched out to instrument-assisted tools, branched out to myofascial cupping, branched out to vibration products, movement, breathing, kind of all-encompassing, really took a turn at COVID. You know, being, you know, continuing education types of courses live, when COVID hit, things really changed, not just for Rock Tape, things changed for everything. So other companies branched, started coming up. And this company called Go Sleeves basically has medical grade silicone within a compression sleeve. So it's kinesiology tape concepts, as well as a compression sleeve. The compression isn't strangulating, but the concept of, if you know what's relatively new in the research regarding kinesiology tape, is that it provides tangential shear. We can basically approximate tissues and create a little bit of a skin drag effect. And that skin drag effect will help lift off on underlying fascial tissues. And if we can do that, we can kind of decrease the velcroing of fascial layers of tissue, right? And then when you have this velcroing of fascial layers of tissue, you basically have you're causing cutaneous nerves to become hypoxic, and that's what can create pain. So with the silicone sleeves, it acts in the same manner as kinesiology tape because it causes a skin drag effect. And then we can see this if I use diagnostic ultrasound underneath the sleeve, or I cut a hole in a sleeve and we do some range of motion, active range or passive range, you can see the skin drag effect. And I did that with Rock Tape as well, is looking at musculoskeletal ultrasound and what it does to skin and fascia. So this company reached out and said, "Hey, I know things are different with Rock Tape now. Are you interested in this?" I said, "Well, send me the product." And I tried the product on, and I wore it a lot with jujitsu, and I gave it to some friends, and I believed in the product. So here I am writing content for them now. And eventually they're a startup, right? But eventually, like Rock Tape was a startup, they'll branch out bigger. And my plan is to do is to build education for them because I love to teach. I love to share concepts that I think are helpful for athletes. So if this gets bigger and bigger, we'll create some content and create courses and move forward like we did with Rock Tape when it first began.
Very cool. That's really awesome.
It really is.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. I love athletic training. There's so many products, right? And I love the idea of just kind of debunking products. Talk about myths and facts of products or the utility of products. And there's so many good products out there, just how you use them, right? And you can't just hang your hat on a myofascial cup or a sleeve, but where do you use it? How can you use it to be supportive within the athletes or the student athletes protocol? So that's what I'm trying to do.
Okay, so when is this product available? Is it on the market now or?
Yeah,
Okay.
you can research or just look up Go Sleeves. It's already on the market. We work with the 49ers, NFL 49ers, work with all kinds of pro athletes. Go Sleeves has been out there for a little while now, but now they're trying to go bigger and bring some research to their product, as well as bring some content and educational content in the medical sense. In the medical sense. So that's where I fit in.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the same line as that, so Dr. K mentioned that we met through Rock Tape. I took just about every Rock Tape course they had. So I saw Dr. Creaseworth a lot. Got to know him pretty well. So one of the things that Rock Tape was that drew me to Rock Tape and like really changed my practice was using science for same session results, because it's a lot of times it's like people have to come to the athletic training room or see the athletic trainer every day, like for the same thing. And Rock Tape just gave a bunch of tools, to just help. When someone comes to you, we have a solution. Boom, right there. We'll help you with it and make it. We'll give you some relief today, and then do these for 2 weeks or 7 days, and you should be good as gold. And so, can you talk a little bit about how you use science to get same session results?
Yeah, I think what the biggest novel factor of Rock Tape that we really hung our hat on is we turned the corner from the mechanical approach of athletic training and physical therapy and chiropractic and OT and everything out there to the neuro values, right? So we know the brain rules the roost. It is neuromuscular. It's not just a muscular system, it's neuromuscular. And we know that if we can influence the nervous system, we can influence movement and safety of movement. So putting a piece of Rock Tape on your skin wasn't about to inhibit or facilitate a muscle. We know that's antiquated research, but what it was is to provide safety to the brain and the largest organ of the body, which is a skin. And as athletic trainers, we bypass skin and fascia. We cut right through it if we're working on some type of cadaver model, and we look at muscles, tendon, bones, and hard, heavy structures, and we forget about the nervous system. And it really is because you're treating a human, you're treating a person. You are not treating a structure. And you cannot tape a meniscus or an ACL or a quadricep or a psoas. I don't even know if you could touch those things. What you can touch is skin. You could touch human hairy skin. And that provides so much information to the insula, to the brain, right? And then, that information provides safety, whether your athlete likes it, right? So if your athlete likes it, you provide the safety, and safety will basically facilitate movement. Your athlete will not feel safe if they don't feel if they won't do movement if they don't feel safe. So that's what Rock Tape did for me. Rock Tape took it a 30,000 foot view. We said we need to turn the corner on what everyone's lecturing on right now: hard structures. It's not about hard structures. It's about safety. And I think that's how Rock Tape really moved forward with myofascial cupping, which became very neuro based and fascial based, biopsychosocial based. All the tools, they were just tools. And we always said, don't let the tool rule you. It's just a cup. It's just a piece of metal. It's just a piece of tape. You can use duct tape if you want. can't work out well in duct tape. It's just neuro. You're touching skin. And if I can provide 60 seconds to 1 minute of touching skin to create safety and then promote or facilitate some movement, then I'm winning. And then we just build up from there. So that's the way we used to think about it. And that's the way we provide these quick little protocols of promoting safety, right? So safety in a prone or supine position, safety in quadruped, safety in tall kneeling, half kneeling, safety standing, safety in standing on one leg with a Nike Flicker glasses catching a football, whatever you want to call it, right? I mean, so just the concept of safety and treating the human and making connection that way was all Rock Tape.
That's interesting. So I think another one of the things that challenges, ironically, from that was people were, especially patients, were just like, no way, no way that what you just did made me feel better. Like, no way. But that it's really not as complex as we think. It's complex, but really not as complex as we think it is.
Yeah, don't we make things really, we love to put big words on things and we love to make it really complex. And, we like to think we own these things, or we like to think that we're moving bones or, breaking down scar tissue when it's really hard to see any of that stuff on diagnostic ultrasound or X-ray. What we think we're really doing is just providing safety. Your brain basically analyzes, and can predict, right? So when you're injured, you stop predicting because proprioceptively you're smudged. And you just don't know where you are in space. And when you don't know where you are in space, your brain puts the brakes on, says, okay, I'm going to make that area tighter. I'm going to make you experience pain, which we can go into a whole different thing there. If we can basically mitigate pain here on the table, then we can mitigate pain, as we load the body. So a piece of tape is a win, but also it's about, who it comes from and how it comes from you. If you can't truly explain it, then you can't get the buy-in. And I think buy-in, whether that's placebo or not, I think buy-in's super important for patient
Oh, for
outcomes.
sure.
That's another part of trust. It's another part of feeling safe. So if the person doesn't feel safe with you and doesn't feel safe with what you're saying, you can hang it up and throw it out the window.
They
And
don't
so
like
there's
they don't like your athletic training room. They don't like the traffic they drove in to get to your athletic training room. You're working with a lot of negativities, right? And psychosis. So that kid had a bad day, your outcomes are going to be pretty poor. So you got to try to, flip the script as quick as you can. And maybe flipping the script is just talking to that kid, talking him down for a second, providing some, passive care, forward from there.
And
You know what I mean?
relationships mean everything, especially
Huge.
working in a high school.
Right.
My students used to tell me when I was working at the school where I worked at for 15 years, they would tell me all the time, like if they were just coming down to say hi, like I just like they would say, no matter how my day was, I knew coming down to Dr. V's office, it was gonna make me feel better. And
Yeah,
then I always had the lavender aromatherapy going. So
I
they were like, if we didn't smell that, we knew you weren't here. And then
That's funny. I don't have that. I just have what I know in being a dad. Being a dad has really helped me become a better athletic trainer just because, you gotta, with kids, you have to be patient. So that's helped me a lot. And Dr. Howard agrees with maybe he agrees. Dr. Holland agrees with me. You have kids too, Dr. Holland?
Yeah, I
No.
got two boys,
There you go.
and
Okay. So it definitely makes you, a different athletic trainer over those years. But yeah, talking to kids, being a person, being a human, just giving them a second of your day. And I think a major limitation with athletic training is we overtreat. We treat once, sometimes twice a day. If you're working out of college, working with a pro athlete, you're treating twice, three times a day. It's like, that's too much. How are you supposed to know what your outcomes are? How do you measure your outcomes?
because
You're
there,
overtreating.
yeah, there's no time for anything to take place.
Yeah. I mean, how many times can you stimulate the nervous system or downregulate the nervous system or a piece of tissue? I just think it's too much, and I think those are hard wins to get. And then some of these athletes will go to a PT, twice a week. And they said, oh yeah, they helped me or they fixed me. You're like, what was I doing for 7 days a week? You know what I mean? So yeah, kind of bird walk there, but yeah.
So we also mentioned black belt sports medicine. So tell us a little bit about that. What's a day like for an athletic trainer? What's a day in the life of an AT working with black belt sports medicine?
Yeah, so Black Belt Sports Medicine is an athletic training medical service company, and we cover just Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because that's been my specialty and my interest probably over the last 24 years. Black Belt Sports Medicine really started with me competing at Jiu-Jitsu events for this company called International Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation. They came here from Brazil and they started putting on these crazy events where people are getting arm locked and choked out and thrown all over the mat. It's like wrestling on steroids where you basically just, really putting your athlete in a precarious position. But I would compete and then I would say, hey, I'm an athletic trainer. I'll cover your event if you give me registration costs to enter your event. And they're like, what is an athletic trainer? And of course, that was Portuguese, so it was a language barrier to start. I said, well, this is what I do. I set up a table and I have a cooler and a bag of tricks, and I'm here for you. And they loved it. And that started in, like 1998. And it just so happened when they came, I was the head athletic trainer at Cal State Dominguez Hills at the time, and that's where they were holding the events. So it was kind of like a perfect collision. They would use that gym. We had a really big gym. And so as the years went on, these events, if you know about jiu-jitsu, they're every weekend and it's like wildfire.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like jiu-jitsu, liquor store, and yoga place all in a strip mall. I mean, there's jiu-jitsu everywhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everywhere. And these events are just so big now. We went from a 4 to 6 mat one day to, you know, our biggest events in Las Vegas now. It's, 47 mats over 4 days. 30,000 competitors, and I've needed help, right? So I would hire, like, hey man, I'm working these events, or yeah, they're long hours, but they pay straight cash, and we're like, okay, we're athletic trainers, we'll do it, right? So we just got on that roll, and then year after year, then I hired Shelby Daly as an administrative assistant, and she's been just awesome in finding athletic trainers across the country. When COVID hit, jiu-jitsu was over,
yeah.
Right? Other than the southern states. The southern states were saying, COVID's not real. We're holding events, right? So we shifted. We had to pivot at that time, too, and find athletic trainers just by direct phone calls, emailing, Instagram, everything we can. Now we just basically, we have a very long list of contractors, and we provide a competitive hourly rate, and they work an event mat side. So you're looking at, 8 to 10 hour days potentially, doing athletic training, mat side. And yeah, you'll see a fair share of dislocations, ACL tears, lacerations, things of that nature. So,
yeah, I once upon a time, you can't tell by looking at me now, but, I did jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai and Taekwondo, very low level. That was decent. But it was interesting when I became an athletic training student and started learning anatomy, how much my jiu-jitsu background enhanced my ability to grasp anatomy, and how much my grasp of anatomy improved me as a martial artist. Because there are very subtle ways that the joint manipulations, if you change the angles just a little bit, or you rotate just a little bit before you crank, and it really is, you get great at learning how to put people together in class, and you get great at learning how to take them apart on the mat.
That's such a good point. Yeah, I totally agree there. So we could just, for example, talk about internal and external GH rotation stretching for a shoulder, right? So that's called a key lock in a Kimura jiu-jitsu.
Right.
So Kimura is internal rotation and key locks external rotation. But now what you're saying, Dr. Holland, is that if you bring the humerus in a certain position and you bring the wrist closer, that range is now very limited, and you can easily make them tap that
way. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
That's the mechanics of being an athletic trainer versus just being a Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner. So I agree, if you just shift a little bit, oh, I could really lay this knee lock on real good.
Oh, yeah.
ACL injury, right, if I wanted to. Yeah.
So that's really cool. That was one of the questions we had. How do you feel like your experience as an athlete, like, how does that enhance your practice? I know I've never done martial arts, any of it, but done a lot of the fascial stretch therapy courses. And so when I was taking level two, there were some of the maneuvers that were not getting into my brain the way that I needed them to, but someone in my group was a martial artist. And so he was like, oh yeah, these are all like submission holds. And I was like, yeah, I'm not following you. But then when he started talking, like, you know, a lot of these are the same moves as our submission holds. And so when he was showing me stuff like on YouTube, and he was like, this looks like that, you know, and I'm, hey, yeah, it really does. And so, but looking at that, and by him telling me what the submission was, it helped a lot of those topics stick into my brain a whole lot better.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I think also working events, I would much rather give privy to an athletic trainer who's a low-level jiu-jitsu competitor or fighter who knows mechanisms, right? So as Dr. Holland was saying, he knows mechanisms of injury, because if you know the recognition of injury at jiu-jitsu is you're already light years ahead. Instead of running out onto a mat and saying, what happened? And the jiu-jitsu guy says, well, I was stuck in a Kimura or I was stuck in a De La Riva position. And then if you have no idea of that, that makes it for a very slow assessment, you know. But if you know the sport, and there are so many PTs and athletic trainers now that do jiu-jitsu, I get a lot of people who know the sport and they're excited because they love the sport. I'm like, and that's exactly what I need. I need, you know, there's a lot of contractors out there that want to work, but the ones that are excited to work because they love the sport truly helps. And you guys know, as athletic trainers, you probably want to work certain sports because that's your sport, or that was your sport as a child. You know, it's much more fun to watch because you know the game, you know, it makes it good. So recognition is huge in jiu-jitsu because some of the positions are hard to recognize unless you know what's going on. They just look like a two tangled up cats, you know?
But that also helped a lot. When we were, Brandon and I went to school together. And so when we were studying a lot of athletic training things, he would get things like right away. And I'd be like, I'm still lost. Like, I need help. And Brandon just had a way, because of his background, of breaking certain mechanisms of injury down to me to make it make sense. So Brandon and I were like freaking frack, because we were so valuable to one another, studying and learning. And so that was very helpful.
Yeah, and everybody learns differently, right? Some are cerebral, some are concrete, some are auditory, you know, all that stuff. So I'm very much a visual learner. Most athletic trainers are, but you know, if you could find somebody who's a counterpart to you, then you're just going to get even smarter. So you guys work well together then.
Oh, yeah. She kept me in line for sure. She's making it sound like I was helping her out all of the time, but it was certainly, I benefit a lot from having her in my corner.
Yeah, I know. I remember going to grad school and I had one or two people who, you know, who I needed there. You know, and then when I saw that somebody was defending their dissertation before me, it just pushed me even harder.
Oh, yeah.
What? You got that email like, they're defending? Oh, my God. I'm just right here. And he's like, just throwing up papers. Like, where am I? It's just long nights, you know, long nights. Yeah. So.
All right. So something unique about some of your experience is that you also have implemented suturing into your toolbox. So could you tell us a little bit about that? How's that? What is that like, Matt Side?
I'm going to call that gray right now, because, you know, athletic training has introduced suturing as part of a practice for athletic trainers, and they provide courses, you know, at the NETA or at the at your local or your what do we call it, your district meetings.
Yeah,
district meetings, we have suturing. So the biggest question is it legal? So luckily, I live in California where we have no practice acts, right? So I'm a little bit of an outlier here that I don't have any oversight. So that gives me a window to take the opportunity and try suturing. So I took courses at Rocky Mountain University. I have a medical doctor who's a friend of mine who has went through extensive practicing with me, gone through some competencies with me, made me practice, you know, on a pseudo skin. It's given me a lot of practice skills and the ability to try, you know. So the events that he is at, I'll try, I'll use lidocaine and I'll basically inject and I'll suture, and I'm getting a lot of practice and a lot of reps. And I think the moment you go from pseudo skin to a human is a huge jump, right? But you got to also think about the sample that I work with. These are jiu-jitsu fighters that are coming from the corners of the earth that have no insurance. You know, they're very thankful. They're very thankful, like, oh, I don't have to spend all this money at the ER. You know, I have, a good, 4-inch lack on your supraorbital ridge or wherever, somewhere on the face. And if you want to do it, please do. So I'm like, this is a great opportunity for me. So I've really implemented the coursework I've taken. And so far, so good. Again, being in California gives me a little bit more of an opportunity probably than other people. But so it's been fun. And with athletic, with jiu-jitsu, we get lax. You know, we get laceration. Especially, we have two levels of jiu-jitsu that Brandon knows. Is we have the kimono jiu-jitsu, where you wear the kimono, and then we have the no kimono, or called no-gi. And no-gi is like wrestling. It's basically board shorts and a rash guard, and it's very slippery and wet, and a lot of headbutting and flying. You know, elbows and knees on, but just an accident, and we'll get lacerations that way. So if I get an opportunity, I'd love to help them.
So what you explain how a lot of the athletes express like gratitude when you come to them and you say like, hey, like what is their response, their reaction, like when you're like, hey, I can take care of this for you, like what, like
Giving me time and money, man. Time and money. I mean, really thankful. Really thankful. Let's see. Our last event, we had a really big event in Las Vegas, and I probably had, I don't know, five or six situations that could have sutures. So with that, I was really busy, and I basically just take a table in another room, and have my headlight on and go for it. And they're just super thankful. And I followed up with all of them. Make sure there's no infections or anything like that. And they were all super grateful, super happy. So, we live in a very litigious society. So I don't know if it's for everybody. And, certain practice acts in certain states are very different. But I will say with California, we are the still sole, wild west out here in athletic training. I mean, plenty of athletic trainers are probably doing things that are not possible in other states, So I kind of look at that as a good thing. I know that we're always trying to get licensure in California, but that these opportunities that I like because I have my own business gives me opportunity to try certain things that I wouldn't be able to try,
Absolutely. So
Blessing and a
that,
curse, right?
what's that?
I said blessing and a curse, right? Is it ever more challenging to so? I'm from Maryland. I'm currently in Northern Virginia, but Maryland got licensure what, a decade ago, and they had been trying for a very long time. And one of the things that would jam them up is there were people who did not have appropriate training or education who were just calling themselves athletic trainers because there was no rule against it,
That's right.
and those people
We have
would. They would always use those people to try to paint the entire profession.
That's right.
When they were, people who opposed licensure for athletic training. So do you see a lot of that over in California, or is it?
When we went from bachelor's to master's, we saw that. We still see that because you don't have to be a certified athletic trainer to work at a high school if the high school wants to hire you. Things have changed over the years that now high schools hire only athletic trainers, certified athletic trainers. But let's say it's a weekend volleyball game, a weekend volleyball event, and they need somebody. They may hire an EMT, maybe somebody who's just a student, and there's no legality against it. It's frowned upon heavily. But the legalities of it, the litigiousness doesn't hold because there's no practiced act, So, but I frown upon it because, you're providing a service out there, and, it's cumbersome because parents and the institution who's holding the event or the federation's holding the event could be held liable. I just don't know if it would hold, because there's nothing to hold it as far as practice acts, I think that, licensure, usually people, I would say for the better part, people want licensure because then we can start billing, on ICD-10 codes and things like that. And we don't have that ability here, But I do frown upon when I'm trying to provide a standard of care for events, and then another event hires, somebody who's not even an athletic trainer who went to school but never finished, never sat. And then they're working and they may get the same dollar amount, possible.
That happens. DC just got licensure. So it started in 2023, and then with the new year, 2024,
Became mandatory.
you had to have it. But we still have a lot of people who are not athletic trainers covering events, covering high school events, sometimes working alongside of, us. And it's like we're doing the bulk of the work because it's within our scope of practice, and musculoskeletal injuries are what they're coming to see us for. So we end up covering, like running here, running there, if it's a big event and you're the only AT and say three other EMTs, all that's falling on you and you're making the same amount of money. So I always say, like, it's scopes of practice. Like, this is outside of like that realm of the EMT scope of practice for certain, evaluations and diagnosis. And like trying to explain that and trying to get people to wrap their heads around that, it's just like, oh, well, we just needed to. It said we had to have a medical person here, so we just hired somebody. And then it's kind of just like, yeah. And it's
Yeah,
just like, well.
it's a bummer on the checkbox thing. I think a lot of people just check box, but the checkbox is okay, they covered it, but then the standard of care is just so poor. EMT is going to be back there with his gurney and his O2, but he doesn't know, he doesn't care. He's back there on his cell phone until he gets called over. Where we have constant eyes on the court or the mat because we're involved. We want to be involved. That's what we like to do. But yeah, it's an issue here too. Here also the minimum wage just went up to $20 an hour, and there's still some state colleges over here that pay, only $23, $24 an hour for an assistant athletic trainer or a contracting athletic trainer. I mean, so I know we can go down that rabbit hole of,
Yeah, that needs to be a whole other show.
I know you've spoken about that and you're an advocate, and I appreciate you, but man, we still battle with all that stuff heavily, So all we can do is just value ourselves. And we constantly are in, constructive discussions, I'll say, with trying to increase pay for athletic trainers as a business. The business still has to make money, and I still have to provide enough compensation for these athletic trainers to want to come to work these events,
Right. And not burn out. Like,
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
energy is not free.
no, that's for sure. And when you're hiring contractors, you're talking about weekend contracts. That means they have jobs, right?
Right.
So they have, I mean, Brandon just talked about he did some work just with Howard the other day, so that's probably side work. And then you have your whole other job, and that's just the life of an athletic trainer, sadly.
Yeah, I actually do all contract work now. I work with USA Volleyball, and so I do a lot of weekend work. Those long weekends, those Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Sometimes kids have school off on a Friday or a Monday. I'm doing volleyball, and then during the week I come back and I help out, at high schools in the city. But that's really all. And I'm an adjunct professor, so there's enough of that to go around right now, but
There is. Well, you should come work Black Belt Sports Medicine. We have events in DC. We have events in the country.
let me
Oh,
know.
that sounds like it would be so much fun.
Yeah, let me know. I'll be there.
You too. Yeah, I'd love to have you guys on. So, after this, I'll send you the Google Sheet, and it'll show our entire annual, all the events that are happening annually. We probably have about, I don't know where we're at now. I would say, was it 56 weeks in the year? Probably at least 56 tournaments, at least.
Wow.
Yeah, if not
Okay.
more. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. 'Cause I don't I'm not really doing anything this summer, so
Okay. Yeah,
that's
and that's usually when we get a lot of people who want to work, right? Because there's then the Federation throws the biggest event of the year right on double days, typical double days of the entire state. Like, don't hold events during double days. I cannot cover them. Everyone has jobs, Like, why don't people come out on Wednesday for this event? I'm like, because people have
have
jobs.
jobs.
People have jobs, Unless
Yeah.
you're gonna pay a suite rate, okay, then maybe they'll call in sick that day, but no, people have jobs.
So one last question before we roll out. What hacks have you uncovered that you don't mind sharing,
In
with all of
Apple.
your experience?
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know if anything we, plugins with Vaseline or nasal spray for no for bleeds. You guys use that one? Before I was suturing, I was, finding any type of different things to do quick stops, so there's sand in there, there's all kinds of cellulose material now, but now that I'm suturing, I'm happy that I can kind of close that stuff. I think quick hacks for me is understanding the nervous system. So, like, let's say I'm checking a hip joint. I may, let's say something has some hip pain. I may distract the hip for a second, like long axis traction, and recheck a manual muscle test of hip extension or abduction or hip flexion. And let's say I get a weakness, and then I'll bump the hip, I'll compact the hip, and I'll recheck. And when I bump the hip, they test strong, then I know traction is not going to be my treatment of choice. So I'm going to probably do a little bit more motor control. If traction helped, right, and they got strong on traction, then I know soft tissue and traction, a little more neuro downregulation is going to be my position. Does that make sense?
Yes,
So
absolutely.
those are quick hacks, right? The nervous system is finicky, man. It's amazing and it acts fast. So I'll do some quick manual muscle testing with distraction or compression and see how the body or the nervous system responds to it. And that will kind of guide my treatment sometime. That's a hack. And you know me, I'm a rock tape person. So floss has been my go-to, man. I mean, I get so much out of, voodoo floss or whatever you want to call floss these days. But man, that really opens people up. And the research will show that it doesn't open anybody up numerically. Like, it doesn't increase range, but increases perception of range. There's like three studies on perception of range. And if you ever tried it, the perception range is ginormous. Like, oh, that feels free. Wow. But then you measure it and it may not measure anything, quantitatively differently. But the influence of the floss, tactile acuity, right? Tactile information to the brain promotes safety. Letting off the compression, right, that you just had on there for 2 minutes gives a lot of freedom. And just, the manipulation of the floss on the fascia. So I hit floss for just about everything. I'm working with a tennis player right now. He has some hip conditions, and I floss like crazy. After my Mulligan Mobs or, banded mobility belt Mobs, I'll floss him. And then we'll go into some motor control right after that. And that's typically the way I work, right? I do passive care, whether that's mobility or, passive stretching. I may do some mobility work as far as joint manipulation, and then I'll work into motor control. And that's always the way I've worked, and then I'll add tape after that to just keep increasing the awareness of the joint position. So,
Yeah, so that hierarchy that you just mentioned, that was really helpful for me in Rock Tape. Like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I shouldn't, mix up and go, I should go in some type of order.
That's
So
right.
that was, but if you're using the nervous system, like, that's always going to be a hack.
Oh, I
Just,
love that. I love that. You open up the window of opportunity, right? Get into the nervous system, open up the window of opportunity, and then start to stack on top of that. You only have a small window, right? So let's say you're freeing up somebody's SI joint and they feel good, right? And then you just let them go. Well, that is not going to feel great anymore. They're going to have what I call a parking lot effect. They're going to get back to their car and say, oh, my back kind of hurts now, But if you just, compound that information to the nervous system after you freed up that position, that's helpful, right? To promote safety. And I think we can keep it as vast as that. We can't say that, well, I repositioned the SI joint and I repositioned L5 on S1 and I did this. Like, you don't know if you did any of that stuff. All you did is promoted the safety of the brain to understand the position, and then you made them very aware of it. That's all. But no one wants to say that, do they? They
No.
want to say that they moved L4 and L5 and, it broke down scar tissue in the QL. Man, come on. Come on. You know what I mean? Like, how do we know that?
I always like to explain that as like once the free once you once the freedom is there or the safety is there, you have to make it stick.
That's
And
right,
so that's making being able, like, if you get some range of motion back, they have to be able to control that range. So, like you gave the example of the SI joint. So if you free that up, You can't just leave it because now you've got all these degrees of freedom that they've found. Again, that person has gotten back. Now you have to be able to control those degrees of freedom. So that's very important.
Yeah. And I love, you know, I pre-test, post-test everything. That's the only way to check your work.
Right.
Yeah, so everyone pre-test, post-test, whether that's range, you know, pain scales or VAS scales are cool, but they're kind of ambiguous. But I would check range, check strength, you know, whether the position, maybe a position they couldn't hold before in standing or quadruped. But pre-test, post-test for me are big wins. And who else is the win for is the patient or the athlete.
Right.
And when you get it to stick right there, you guys, I mean, that if I can get the win right there in front of them, you know, what I've been using a lot lately is stick mobility. You guys use stick mobility much?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm familiar with that.
Yeah. I love that thing. So I hit stick mobility to get some really good fascial length. Mm-hmm. And then I start hammering home some motor control after that. And I don't know, the athletes seem to like it that I'm working with. So that's a big one for me lately. So plug to stick mobility.
Stick mobility. Yeah. That's the way I feel about fascial stretching. Like, the athletes love that.
Hmm? Yeah. We know the athletes want to lay down on the plinth and, you know, get this passive care and like, nah,
nope.
We're going to stand, do some stick mobility. And you're going to do some, you know, push pull here with me. You know, I was always really, I got kind of negative with the whole passive care or passive stretching for a while. So it was going to be, you want this? Well, it's going to be a PNF and we're going to work, or it's going to be something standing and we're going to do some work. So.
So yeah, as you get further into the levels, it's majority PNF. Like it's a lot of work for the athlete as well.
For sure. Yeah.
Cause I'm working too hard. Can't do that.
And, you're working with multiple athletes at one time. Right. That's what's amazing about an athletic trainer. You could have 20 people come in at once. What are you going to do?
Yeah. All at the same time. When that bell rings at 3:30, hello.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they love you for it, right? So if you
care,
they're loving you for it. So
absolutely. All right. So we talked about a lot of things. So how can everyone find you on social media? We talked about you're presenting at the Far West Conference. So where else can we hear Dr. K teach and speak?
Yeah, so I'll be at the Far West talking about blood flow restriction, which I think everyone should be using by now. You know, if you have anybody who's an aging athlete, or anybody just can't get under a bar or put any weight on them anymore, I mean, BFR is the answer. The research supports it heavily. Any athlete that's post-op, you know, or just can't be on the field, BFR is just a great response to, you know, changing the dynamic of the hormonal system and the muscular system with no load or very little load. So I'll be lecturing on that. And I lecture on BFR across the country for a company called Smart Tools, which is Smart Cuffs, same idea. And there's a lot of BFRs out there. So BFR is BFR. Some have very validated numbers as far as what we call limb occlusion pressure. So I love the lecture on BFR. I think it's a great tool to use. I also still lecture for Rock Tape. Rock Tape, like I said, is a product company of kinesiology tape and myofascial tools. There you go. So, and I still like, you know, talking with them because, you know, we're at the cutting edge of the neuroscience, which I love, right? The biopsychosocial and the neuroscience, which I really think that as a society of athletic training, we really need to get deeper into. And I think that's it. Well, I'm doing a big lecture for a company called PESI, P-E.
Okay.
Yeah. So they used to be Cross Country Education. Now they're called PESI. They're the biggest online company as far as CEUs. So I'll be doing a lecture on, you know, I think that's going to be more for nurses and other people who really don't know who we are. And I love to educate people constantly on who we are, what we do, and who we are, because that's still a misnomer out there, what athletic training is, what an athletic trainer does. So I'm constantly trying to beat down that door. So anybody wants to hear me talk about who we are, what we do, and what we can do, then I'm all for it. So I'll be doing a 3-hour lecture with them. And that's probably in the summertime. And I think that's about it. So, or you can come take my class in Southern California at the college.
Do you have social media?
I do. My social media is dr.kreI, and that'll pop up as Dr. Kreisworth. So that's my social Instagram account. I also have a business account called Black Belt Sports Medicine. and that's an Instagram account as well.
Okay.
Black Belt Sports Medicine is also on Facebook. Do people still use Facebook? I don't
They
know.
do. So
Brandon, Brandon's on there all the time.
my wife and my kids say Facebook is for old people, but I am resisting.
I still look at it.
I
I
do
still look.
too.
Yeah. So I have that. And then if anybody wants to contact me, blackbeltsportsmedicine@gmail.com. I can be contacted if they're interested in working for Black Belt and doing contracting hours or learning about the sport of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I'm constantly trying to spread that word too, because more often than not, a new athletic trainer will contract in some type of jiu-jitsu martial art, you know, and they're going to have to know what's going on that mat. Because to tell you the truth, guys, I've had people hire, I'd hire them, report to the event, and leave the event. Leave.
What?
Leave. They said, oh, that's, this is too much.
It's, if you don't have the stomach, you have to know if you have the stomach
Well,
for
let's just talk
it.
about kids today.
Oh, that's
Who
different too. Yeah,
leaves?
that is
Come
different
on.
too. But
Wow. Really?
also, like
I know.
the sport is becoming more popular. Like when I did it, mixed martial arts was like a baby, and jiu-jitsu has been around for like a trillion years. But when mixed martial arts first started, it wasn't really mixed. It was like, I'm going to do my form, you're going to do your form, and we're going to see which style of martial arts is the best. Now, everyone is taking the best aspects of every martial arts and things that work well for them as an individual. So they'll take some from jiu-jitsu, and they'll take some from boxing, and they'll take some from wrestling, take some from Muay Thai, and whatever opportunity is available, they'll use something that they learned to take advantage of that opportunity. And another thing that's kind of changed is back when I did it, it was safer in that we would give each other an opportunity to tap before we broke something off. Now, guys these days will, as soon as they have a chance, they're going to twist your arm until it pops. And if the referee's not fast enough, or if you don't tap fast enough, it is going to be you won't be able to wipe your butt for 6 weeks. And so,
Yeah, I actually sat on a, I got hired as a expert witness on a murder case in Canada for a jiu-jitsu athlete who choked out and killed another athlete in a dojo.
wow.
Yeah, it was so I wrote a large manuscript for him, and then I went up there to basically talk about the various chokes and the sport of jiu-jitsu for the prosecution. So you're right. You're right. So we've seen it a million times on Instagram of people taking it way too far,
Oh, sure.
and took it way too far, obviously. But people have reached out because, you know, of my PhD and my dissertation in jiu-jitsu, which is exactly what you talked about, Bex, basically the genesis of what MMA really is. And you described the Ultimate Fighter Challenge as
Oh, for
that's
sure.
exactly how it started, and then it became the Ultimate Fighter Championship with rounds. And you know, but back in the days of Hoist Gracie, which is who I trained under in Torrance, California, he was out there just challenge, he would, you know, challenge Mike Tyson if he would have stepped out, you know. But yeah, it's quite the genesis of what the sport has become and what it's capable of. So really interesting stuff. Yeah.
Here's a question I like to ask athletic trainers who participate in things like jiu-jitsu and combat sports. Does your knowledge of the human body ever put you in a position where you hesitate to execute something? It's
Oh
like,
man, I play safe all the time.
I have.
I know, yeah, I know that. Here, let me tell you before you start. I don't have the research yet, but over the years, the biggest thing I've seen is posterolateral corner knee issues. Why? Because we play this thing called a guard,
Oh,
right? So we
yeah.
have the windy legs, and we weave them in between other people's legs. Well, if you sit in hip external rotation, and tibial internal rotation. So you kind of have this twisting of the posterolateral capsule. Over time, you will get tissue creep. So that tissue creep will show up to me at my medical table as a torn LCL, posterolateral corner PCL, or arcuate ligament, popliteal ligament too. But if I ask them what position have you been playing, because I know the position, they say that I'm playing this external rotation guard. It's called Delahiva guard. And I know, okay, well, that's just a sloppy knee. Because over time, 10 years of playing these positions will promote a lot of knee issues, you know, knee sloppiness,
Right.
just knee laxity, you know. So that's what's big about me knowing the sport is I know that where anybody else is going to show up is like, oh, this guy just tore his PCL, but you got to know the positions.
Yeah.
So going back to your question, is I play that position a lot, but I don't play it loosely. I play it with meaningful intent. Like I'm going to do something with this position or I'm going to get out of it. I'm
Right.
not going to hang out in these positions because it promotes havoc and tissue creep over time. And I know that luckily because I'm a sports medicine guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
How about your
but.
approach to your opponents? Do you ever, are you ever, so like I have this thing where like I knew I had to get out when I was getting slow. And so that was a challenge for me. But also it's like, dude, if I crank on this a little bit, you get to go home with your broken arm. If I crank on it a lot, I get to go home with your broken arm. And I know what kind of rehab or what kind of surgery or what kind of recovery you have to look forward to. And for me to just prove this point at this moment or to win this bout is probably not worth what you're going to have to deal with. And I was like, maybe he called me a nice guy, but I just.
I think that's, well, that's a teammate, first of all. So if you're talking about in the dojo, you should be a good teammate
Oh,
and
yeah, for
not take
sure.
that ankle, home with you. You know what I mean? So to speak. At the tournament level, people are fighting for a win. So if you're not tapping, I mean, I'll tell you this is the Japanese contingency that comes to these events, the very large world events, they're kamikaze. They do not tap and they're known not to
Right,
tap. Like,
yes. That is
yeah.
true, yes.
But when it comes to your dojo and your teammates, no, I call it catching. So if I caught your arm, I'm gonna let it go. If you spin out of it, I'm like, all right, man, let's restart. If you're gonna play a game, but I try not to let the whole saying of, check your ego at the door is big in jiu-jitsu.
It
Check your
is.
ego at the door and live to fight another day.
Yeah, the
You know what
goal
I
is to
mean?
go home and come back. You want to make
Yeah,
it back.
but I don't know how old are you now, man?
I'll be 44 in August.
Okay, cool. So I'm 55 and I started checking that thought process like, yeah, probably my early 40s, late 30s, because I've had multiple surgeries already. My hands are completely knurled up with Herbertin's and Burchard's notes
Oh,
from
yeah.
grabbing the gi. All my fingers
Oh.
fourth. They all look like they're grabbing the gi, So I'm pretty beat up, So I pick and choose, I've been a black belt for a long time, so I pick and choose who I'm gonna roll with.
Oh, yeah.
So if some kid calls me out, I'm like, respectfully, I'm like, I'm not interested, man. I'm gonna keep it in my own age group here.
Yeah, and then the new guys are the ones you really have to watch out for because they don't understand the they don't understand how much a small movement can create a big mess.
That's
So
right. Yeah,
they don't realize how hard they're pulling or how much they're twisting.
The
And
white belts are the most dangerous. Even though the white belts know the least, the white and blue belt level, they are the most dangerous because they can't control their body in space.
They
And
don't know when or how to throttle back sometimes, and
that's right. That's right. Yeah, man. Yeah.
well, that's still happening in the world of
Yeah, but
jujitsu.
again, the dojo owner and the leadership really has to be the forefront. If you have leadership that's core and you got a bunch of guys and they're trying to kick each other's ass, I think that shows a lot about the leadership of the dojo. You really have to keep things respectful,
Wow, well, that was fun.
Yeah, this was really good.
Cool. I love it. Yeah, I love talking about it. So I really appreciate you guys having me on. Danita, if you want to trade shirts, I'll send you a black belt sports medicine shirt. You
Yeah.
should give me a top dat shirt.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I'm going to ask you for your information because we actually send our guests top dat swag.
Oh,
So,
sweet. I love that.
yeah.
Love that. Well, I'll send you guys a shirt too.
Sweet. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
It's great meeting you guys again. Well, Danita, I've known you for a long time. Great meeting you, Brandon.
Good to meet you as well, sir. And it was a pleasure. Did we forget anything?
No, I don't think so.
Did we plug Copacon?
Oh, we didn't.
We didn't. Okay, everybody. So the NATA's Committee on Practice Advancement is having a virtual symposium where the courses will be on demand and it will be available April 26th through June 7th. If you want to get CEUs, everything is entirely on demand. You have to watch the videos in their entirety and take the assessments no later than June 7th to get credit for the CEUs. And you might be able to see a couple of cool people who you're used to hearing present some fun stuff about cannabis. That's me plugging me and Donita. We're presenting cannabis for athletic trainers and what it means for us and our athletes. So
not like cannabis for athletic trainers, like
cannabis. We're presenting CBD, how CBD and THC behave in your system and the benefits and the ergogenic effects and also some of the rules and regulations that we have to be aware of as things become as attitudes towards cannabis products becomes more lax across the country.
Interesting. So, wow. I'd like to tune in for that. That's interesting.
Yeah. It was a fun thing to present. And we actually did it at our district's READ conference and got a lot of great reviews on it and a lot of great questions.
And you get a lot of backlash too, or people were they maybe we could take this offline too. I don't know how, if you want to end the podcast.
We can talk. I mean, this is good for people to hear, I think.
Yeah.
No, I think it's really interesting because, you know, it's here, it's now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we also have people that will never accept, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So did those people come out on you or no?
I have not had anyone approach me and say that we shouldn't be, you know, covering this topic or teaching this topic. Everyone was super interested in what we found. When we first did it, like deregulation was brand new, or I should say decriminalization was brand new. So there still weren't a lot of answers and there was still a lot of confusion as to what was legal and what wasn't. And then the rules from one county in this state to the next county in the same state would vary. So a lot of that stuff has changed now. And a lot of the penalties for athletes in different organizations and leagues and regulations for those guys are different. And we're moving away from punitive action and more towards treatment. But also, I was going to say also,
some of the regulations for drug testing at like for industrial workers, because a lot of athletic trainers in the industrial setting, a lot of jobs that aren't like, you know, safety specific, they will do their drug testing, but it will not have a cannabis profile. It will not have a THC profile in that drug test. Yeah. So there's a lot changing in the as far as regulation and testing.
Yeah. And I don't want to turn this into an interview process because I'm really interested. So no. I'll just watch.
No, I like talking about it and it's fun for me. And I think it's fun for our listeners. A lot of those.
Yeah, it'll be a nice teaser for them.
Yeah. So
I think that, you know, when I look at youth, like in my own children, I wouldn't want my children, you know, 12, 13 to be using cannabis yet.
Right.
For people with chronic pain or persistent pain, of course, I think it's a great modality, you know, because I've seen it work before.
Incredible alternative to the narcotics and things that are out there for some of us.
What's that?
An incredible alternative for narcotics for sure. And other things that are out there.
I mean, we always, with Rock Tape, we used to talk nonstop about non-opioid solutions, right? So he has a non-opioid solution to people with persistent pain or, you know, chronic pain. So for sure, I think we need to get by the aspect of, you know, inhaling something. And I think that visual image is still going to ring true. I don't know. It's like, you know, somebody drinking open container in front of your house, you know, if somebody's actually inhaling something, it's visually a negative effect.
For sure. But I think also one of the things about that too is you can take it as a tablet or as a gel or as sublingual, intranasal. So it's not always something where you're inhaling vapors or smoke. So that kind of it's not sometimes not different from taking a vitamin.
I agree. Other vehicles are warranted and needed. I think socially, you know, the inhalation and smoke is just part of the social culture of, you know.
We just have to unlearn a lot of things. And that's unlearning things I'm coming to find is harder than learning them in the first place.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, that's got to be harder. I mean, taking away neural pathways is much more difficult than making new ones.
The reasons why we, when I'm talking to my high school athletes, I'm always talking about like buying it off the street. You don't know what it is or what it has in it. And then also in that age group, the way it acts on the brain, it really affects your memory.
Oh, for sure.
And it can cause permanent memory damage, especially on the developing brain. And then also not being able to, you know, like it does, it's not like alcohol, but it's still like your perception of things is not the same. So for, you know, when you're young and you still have that lots of degrees of freedom in your perception, that makes it a little bit scarier for that population.
Yeah, the world of cannabis and jiu-jitsu is huge. Mm-hmm. It's really big. I mean, a lot of people, they basically use cannabis prior to hard exercise. I just can't get over that because I'm such an old school guy. I don't know how their field of perception is different. They feel like they can learn more using cannabis and then going through a hard jiu-jitsu practice. And that's something new to me, but there's a lot of the youth are doing it, you know?
But so that's in the presentation. We definitely touch on that in there. Okay. But yeah, so much is changing. And I actually learned from, because I was not hip to a lot in the cannabis world for a long time. But then in DC, when they decriminalized it, I couldn't do anything about my student athlete that was across the street smoking and then come, you know, the only thing I could do was learn and try to educate them. And so one day we had a game and I actually learned about the different types of cannabis, like sativa and indica, and like what it does from my students on this night where I canceled a game because you have to have 18 football players to play. And we were waiting for, 17 and 18 to show up. We're trying to get on the bus and we're waiting for these two. And they come in, they smell like the inside of a bag of weed, right? So I'm like, yep, nope, we're not playing. And everybody's like, all the kids are like mad, but they know me. So they already knew that wasn't going to fly. So, so somebody stopped by my office and said, like, you know, Dr. V, not all cannabis makes you sleepy and makes you unaware. And I was like, okay, well, game's still over, blah, blah, blah. But then I was like, hey, come here. Now, what are you talking about? Tell me about this. So that's when I started.
We have to talk about, I'm sure you talk about it too, is the legal age limits, right? Legal age limits, because, you know, even teaching at the community college, these kids will come in just reeking. And like, and then I have a negative effect right away. Like, no, you can leave today. I don't want you, you know, you just, it's not working for me. Right. And, but I need to know, I'm making it about me,
right?
You know,
yeah, I understand.
And this kid's got some other conditions where he learns better. You know, I don't know how, but maybe it's possible. And he's so young; they're only 18, 19 years old. They come into the community college, so it's definitely something I have to learn and be open to. Instead of just saying, you know, being old school, you know, Karen saying, "Don't do that," blah blah blah. You know, so yeah.
Yeah, so definitely check it out.
Yeah. I will. No, now I'm really interested because I think that topic, man, you hit it on the head. You can take that topic everywhere.
Oh, for
everybody
sure.
I want to learn and hear about it. You know, that's for a topic. Sure. How many times do we talk about the ACL and a GH joint? Let's talk about what's real, what's going on, you know. Struggling kids, mental, you know, issues and weed, you know. I mean, we really need to go to what's going on in this country, you know.
Oh, for sure.
That's it.
I look forward to hearing your feedback about it. I'm really excited now that you
negative or positive, right?
Yeah, true. Yeah. Yes, because we plan on doing it again, and we want to take what people are saying and fix it, make it better. So whatever feedback, if it's good, bad, if it's ugly, we need
to
know.
Hear it.
Yes.
Yeah,
just don't count
how
many times I say
Words. Yeah. There it is, right there. I think I appreciate that because at my age, trying to talk to youth, you know, and coming with, you know, the way I feel and I can own my own feelings, you just get a lot of negative feedback. Like, no, I'm telling you how I feel and I own those feelings. We can agree to disagree. That's okay.
Oh,
and I
sure.
think that's a lot. What we have a lot of problems with now is you can agree to disagree and still be copacetic. You know what I mean? And people are quick to jump on, you know. I'm going to shut you down because of your thoughts, you know, like, no,
cancel culture,
cancel. Yeah. I'm not, let's have a conversation, you know,
right.
A conversation. So, all right. Thanks you guys.
Very cool.
All right. So we're going to wrap it up, I guess. So don't forget to follow us, on social media at @the_top_DAT on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can follow us at top-DAT1. That's top-DAT and the number one on LinkedIn. So, we're back. Season 3, episode 1 in the books.
All right. Thanks for rocking with us today. I am signing off. I am Dr. Donita Valentine, the unapologetic athletic trainer. And remember to stand for something, because if you don't stand for something, you will fall for anything.
And I'm Brandon Holland, your Uplift Athletic Trainer, reminding you that the difference between a bad day and a good day is your outlook. Change your attitude, change your life. For Dr. Creesworth, thank you for tuning in.
I don't have a sign-off.
Oh, you don't have a sign-off. You want to
sign-off?
Whatever you want to say, what's your message to the people?
Oh, I don't know what to say. I'm jealous. You guys, those are good sign-offs. I appreciate from learning from you guys today.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you.
Absolutely.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next week.
See you later.